Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This is Reasons to be Cheerful with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
Hello, you.
Howdy, partner.
Howdy. Well, in the Reasons to be Cheerful soap opera, we had a cliffhanger last week. You were off to eat a vegan burger.
Yes.
So how did it go?
Beyond meat. It was quite nice, actually. That was a high voice. Quite nice, wasn't it?
If we ever see you interviewed on TV and your voice goes high,
yeah.
Is that
it's a Larry David thing, isn't it?
Of course it is.
Yeah, it was nice. I did it again. It was nice.
Okay.
It was like a burger, but it was, you know, it was a Beyond Meat burger.
Right. Is it one of these where you bite into it and it bleeds beetroot? Because that's
not quite bleeds, but it did have the sort of consistency of, you know, sort of animal gristle.
That's just what we've been looking
just
for.
What we've been looking
that's the
for.
Thing that's been putting
exactly.
people off going vegetarian
exactly.
vegan. If only it was a bit more gristly.
Exactly.
Yeah. Are you fussy about food at all? Anything you won't eat?
Snails.
Right.
Frog's legs.
I'm guessing it doesn't come up that often.
No, sort of I'm not a massive one for the crustaceans.
See, then this is why you won't go on I'm a Celebrity, isn't it? It's the eating insects.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely. No, I definitely. What about you? What have you been up to?
Yeah, no, this and that. I went to the opera.
A night at the opera?
Yeah, look at me. I mean, I've never been to an opera in my life, nor would I have countenance going to the opera. But a friend of mine is working at the English National Opera. He said, do you want to come along? So I went to see La Boheme the other
night. He's running the English National Opera.
He is, but you know.
Working at.
He is.
Selling programmes.
I'm trying to say, like, I don't know people in high places.
Do you know people in high places?
And
I mean, they're
you.
All going to be.
And you.
They're all going to be part. Well, you know people in high places and people like me.
Yeah,
is that what you
yeah,
mean?
Yeah.
You know, they're all going to be part of the Jeffocracy.
Definitely, yeah. Yeah, he's going to be Minister for Opera, my friend Stuart.
Yeah, exactly. His job's for the boys. So was it good?
Yeah, I really enjoyed it.
La Boheme. Did it last 17 hours or something?
No, this is what I mean. I was braced for it.
We
told the babysitter.
Braced position.
Yeah, we told the babysitter, expect us when you see us. But what was great is it was sort of 2 hours with an interval in between. Thank you. Yeah, we just tried to high five each other and missed, which is our little
I mean, that
thing.
Is definitely, honestly, I'm quite a sort of, you know, time fascist when it comes to the old arts.
Mm, yeah.
I joke with my friend Jersey Rourke about this, who used to run the Don Manuel House, and has got a very exciting film coming out about Mary, Queen of Scots. But she thinks I'm just slightly a philistine, which I probably am.
No, things are too long. Films especially.
I know.
Films only
you get
really
fidgety.
Need to be... Yeah, I mean, I've
run out of Maltesers, referring back to last week.
Weak bladder, referring back to
weak
something about a year
bladder.
Ago. Yeah. So I think most things don't need to be longer than an hour and a half. It's plenty, isn't it?
I mean, it's quite an important lesson for our podcast.
Right, let's talk about what we're talking about this week then.
We're talking about dads.
I'm one.
Yep, I'm one too. We're talking about dads and in particular father's leave, the question of how much leave, time off dads get in Britain when their children are born. It's a statutory 2 weeks at the moment, which is pretty hopeless. Other countries do a lot better. We're going to be talking about how that changes not just the experience of fathers, children, mothers, a gendered workplace. You're going to love it because it's Reasons to be Swedish. We're going to be talking to somebody from Sweden who's written a report about how Sweden need to go even further on dad's leave. And then we're going to be talking about people who've experienced better dad's leave in the UK. So I think it's a really important subject.
And we got a comedian on the podcast who is known to Ed of old.
Yes, she was at university with me.
Sindhu V, who was nominated for Best Newcomer at the Edinburgh Festival this year, and she's coming along to give us some ideas, which could be reasons to be cheerful.
Definitely, we're looking forward to that. What's your reason to be cheerful?
Went to a rave.
Is that the opera?
No, I went to a rave. You know, like a rave in a smelly nightclub.
Wow.
Yeah, with bouncers and all that.
Amazing. What was it like?
It was a baby rave. It was a rave for babies. I mean, I wouldn't go. Yeah, well, I mean, I'd rather a baby rave than an actual rave. But I mean,
I'm wincing.
Well, I had a good time.
Did you?
Well, I could have done without the music, to be perfectly honest.
Were the babies raving?
They were raving. There were bubbles. They were spraying out foam like they do in those nightclubs in Ibiza, but making it snow for the babies. They liked all that. There was lots of glitter.
I never went to the nightclubs in Ibiza.
surprised me.
How long did it last?
For me, too long. I think it was 2.5 hours.
Oh, my God.
I refer you to my earlier
2.5 hours? About... You must have had a headache after that.
I did find myself going and just sitting in the toilet for a while just to decompress and kill some time before I had to go back out into the loud rave.
What was your child doing at that point?
He was quite happy.
On his own?
He was with my wife.
Oh, right.
And just release him into the rave. Right. Yeah. So that's my reason to be cheerful, the baby rave.
Well, mine is sort of arts related. It's a bit of a stretch, but I think I've said to you before that we've got this big push to make 2020 Year of Culture in Doncaster, where I'm an MP. And for the last 13 years as an MP, I don't have a cinema in my constituency. So there's obviously cinemas in Doncaster, a multiplex, and there's going to be another one. But we don't have a permanent full-size cinema in my part of Doncaster, in my constituency. We have pop-up cinemas and so on, which is obviously important. There's this sort of old building in one part of my constituency, which used to be a cinema. I've done some research now. It's closed in 1964. But actually, the facade is still there, and the sort of, apparently, the seats inside are still there.
Wow.
Or at least parts of it are. And it's now, it's for rent.
So are you suggesting that you, in addition to your role as MP, become the local cinema owner?
I'm not quite suggesting that.
Oh, this is good. You could have make your own sandwich concession in the foyer.
I hadn't thought of that.
Yeah. I could work as an usher, dress up with a little hat and get a torch.
Would you be willing to do that?
Shushing people. I'm very good at shushing people.
Selling them Maltesers.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, but I've got, it's a kind of little dream I've got, which is to turn this old cinema, which then became a supermarket, a fireplace shop, and then another shop, back into being a cinema.
Let's do it, the Milliplex.
And if there's anybody out there who wants to help support me do this, the Milliplex, that's very good.
Thank you. You can have that.
Cindy Millie. if there's anyone who wants to help, you know, in a sort of Sam Conniff reasons to be pirate way, let me know.
Reasons to be cheerful with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
We're delighted now to be joined by Lars Orenius, who is the General Secretary of a Swedish aid organisation and the author of a recent government report on shared parental leave. Tjena Lars, hur mår du?
Tjena, I'm all bra. Thank you.
There we go.
What is that?
Hello, how are you? I mean, that's about the extent of my Swedish.
It was impressive.
Ed asked me if I could do the whole interview in Swedish, and I said,
"No, honestly, I'm impressed.
Probably
you're
not
a linguist."
Yeah. So, Lars, can we start by asking you? You've done this report on the Swedish system. Can you tell us what the system is as it stands and how long it's been like that?
Yes, it's been changing for years, but right now the system today provides that the parental insurance is paid out for 480 days for one child. And today the system provides that 3 months are reserved for each parent. This means that you cannot transfer these days to the other parent.
So it's a use it or lose it system?
Exactly, for those 3 months, yeah.
Can we talk about what the system looks like more broadly? Just give us an overview of it.
Well, in a historical perspective, the parent insurance has contributed to a high labor market participation for women and the possibilities of combining work and family life. It's extensive for both men and women. It's generous and it's in some way flexible. But at the same time, still, it's not in practice, it's not gender equality. Even if it goes in the right direction, but it's going slowly. And still, the situation is that the mothers takes 75% of the parental leave and the fathers 25%.
How has that grown What was the initial take-up and how has it grown over the decades since this was introduced?
This first legislation was in the 70s, and at that time, the fathers take 1%, I think, of the parental leave. So, of course, it's going in the right direction, but it's going slowly.
So it has had an effect, basically, this 3 months use it or lose it system?
Absolutely. That has been the thing that affected this, has the biggest impact, those different decisions or the legislation in the first one was in 1995, the first month. The second month was in 2002. And now the third month was in January 2017. But if you look at the first and the second month there, there has been big changes after that. And that's what really you can see when you look into this, that change the behavior.
And we want to come on to the criticisms in your report in just a couple of minutes. Before that, can you talk to us about the positive difference it's made to mothers and fathers and gender equality?
For women, it is very clear that it changed. I mean, the long-term effect, the longer absence has negative effects in terms of worsening wage developments, which also leads to poorer pensions. And it's also clear that there's a connection between a long parental leave and a major responsibility for homework, what you call the double work for the woman, and that's continue after you've been home with the kids. And that's the thing you want to change.
So Lars, in your report, you obviously think the system has benefits, but what are the problems in the current system? Maybe you can explain that for our listeners.
Still, the problem is the uneven use of the parental leave, and that's and that what it's lead to is those negative effects I mentioned in terms of the wage developments for women, and also the poorer pensions in the future, and also the connection between a long parental leave and the major responsibility for homework. So still, there is a big problem, even if it goes in the right direction.
And what did you propose in your report?
My investigation suggested a whole new model for the use of the parental insurance or parental leave, a kind of one-third model that each parent has one-third, and one-third that can be used to give to the partner or to other persons also. For example, the mother or grandparents can use it. My proposal also included a reservation of 5 months instead of 3 months. I also suggested new age limits, a 3-year limits, which means a stronger concentration for the child's in the child's younger age, which promotes a more equal distribution of the parental leave.
So just to be clear about this, this would mean 5 months for the man, 5 months for the woman, and then 5 months to be taken by either a grandparent or one of the parents.
Exactly. And I believe in the proposal, and I think it's a balance. We have a Swedish word, maybe you know that, it's the Swedish word lagom, and it's a little bit difficult to translate, but that means that there's a balance, and I think there's a balance in this proposal. It puts pressure on the dads to spend more days with the child. It's giving the children a better access to both parents, and still there's a flexibility above all. It can also change the long-term effects that this uneven use of the parental leave creates. We also consider a completely individualized insurance in that meaning that divided to 50-50, not at all have the possibility to hand over days to the partner. But we found that it was difficult because there is a need for parents with that flexibility. And family situation looks different. And we also weighed in the situation for entrepreneurs or companies who just started, the difficulties for them maybe to have a 50-50 insurance or individualizing.
Lars, we have a thing on the podcast where I am appointed supreme ruler of Great Britain.
don't worry, Lars, it's unlikely to happen. I mean, I know that our politics is strange at the moment, but it's unlikely to happen.
Don't rule it out.
Yeah.
But if I was to make you Minister for Families, perhaps, what is the first thing you would do in the UK on day one?
Given that we only have 2 weeks paternity leave at the moment.
All right. Well, my suggestion is to start by increasing the awareness about the long-term effects for women, and also try to understand all the benefits that an equal use of the parental leave will lead to. And one thing that this was very clear in my the directive from the government that was the focus on the children's right. And I think that was especially important to look at the child situation and the child's need for close contact with both parents. So that is an important thing I should point or focus about.
Lars, tack så mycket.
Tack så mycket. Thank you very much for inviting me. Yeah.
Thank you.
To talk about the situation in the UK, I'm delighted that we're joined by Sam Smethers, who's Chief Executive of the Fawcett Society. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Just tell us, to sort of, so we get our heads around this, where does the UK currently stand in terms of what provision is available to dads?
In terms of what's given to dads as fathers, it's still very basic. So it's 2 weeks paid paternity leave.
Right.
And the statutory rate is low. So you're talking about 139, 140 quid a week. It's not very significant really to support dads to take leave. So really what dads often do is take annual leave rather than taking the paternity leave, because then they can obviously get it at their basic rate.
So like paid holiday, basically.
Yeah, paid holiday.
Yeah, yeah. But there's a wrinkle, isn't there? Because in 2015, the government introduced the option to share some of the leave. Is that right?
Yeah. So what the government did, and it was a step forward, so let's give them credit for that. They said to mums, well, instead of you having all the leave to yourself, your maternity leave, you can choose to share some of it with your partner if you want to. But it's still very much her leave that she can choose to share with him. It's not his entitlement.
It's up to 3 months, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's still an inadequate solution to the bigger problem, because ultimately you're not changing any of the fundamentals of the picture. It's still, she's the presumed carer, not him. And she may choose to share some of the leave with him. And what we want is to move to a system which is much more about presumption of equal responsibility for parenting.
And even with that policy, not so many people are using it. Is that right?
That's right. Because, well, again, because
you're not... 2% take, is it?
I think the figures are a little bit unreliable, to be honest, but it is low. And I think what we're seeing is a leave system that sends this very strong message that mums have a generous period of time off and they can choose to share with their partner, but it's still her job primarily. So we haven't sent a different cultural norm message. And that's one problem with it. And then the second problem is it's just paid a too low a rate for dads to take it. So if you can't afford to take 3 months at, you know, the statutory minimum, and there isn't an enhanced offer from your employer, and most employers won't offer an enhanced paternity pay equivalent to the maternity rate that they might offer, then you're at a disadvantage. And most families, when you're making a household decision about what you can afford to sacrifice in terms of earning, will sacrifice the lower income.
So the difference with mums is that although the statutory rate, I think for the first 6 weeks, you get 90% of your salary.
Yes, and it's uncapped. Yeah.
But beyond that, you're saying that employers are more likely to offer an enhanced offer to mums than they are to dads, basically.
Yeah, because again, that's evolved over time. And, you know, a good employer, many employers obviously want to be good employers and offer a decent rates to their mums going off on maternity leave, will offer an enhanced rate. So you might get 90%, then you might get that 90% extended, or you might get half rate for another few months.
But not for dads.
Not for dads in general. I mean, not that's not universal.
Sure.
Some employers have made an equivalent offer to dads, but it hasn't been the common practice.
So that's the situation. What needs to be done in the view of you and the Fawcett Society?
Well, we would like to get the fundamentals right. So that means a presumption of equal responsibility for parenting, which means a dedicated period for her, a dedicated period for him, paid at a much more affordable rate. So in that rate has to be determined, but it has to be a rate that will encourage dads to take the leave, and then a period that they can share. And give families choice and control over their lives. It's absolutely up to them what they do with it. But we have to enable that equal parenting. At the moment, the system effectively tells parents, you're not on the same level, you're not on the same footing. It's really her job, but, you know, she might let you in. And, yeah, that's not good enough.
And how many months are you wanting it to be for the dads?
Well, what we've said is we wouldn't take maternity leave away from mums. We wouldn't try and reduce what mum's currently entitled to,
which is 9 months.
Yeah, which is 9 months paid. So, you know, because I think if you started to impose effectively a penalty on women, that would be disadvantageous both politically and practically. But I would think a 3 months paid period of leave for dads paid at a significant rate would be very welcome. You could have the first 6 weeks paid at 90%, same as the mums, possibly with a cap for the dads, because there is also this question about how high you go. And then the next few weeks paid at, you know, closer to sort of, you know, 70%, 50%, something like that. So you've got to get to a rate where dads can afford to take it. Otherwise, you won't change anything.
And in a way, that would get us to where Sweden is sort of now, more or less. Not completely, because it's probably still less generous, but And so that would be your sort of, if you like, the first step, and then you'd like somehow over time to get to more like equality.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, you can't engineer it to the point of removing choice from families. So I think you have to accept that people make their own decisions, and it, you know, it will be a rational choice for the family, and that's fine. But you've got to remove the constraints. And at the moment, we're operating a very constrained system, which doesn't fit with families' lives, doesn't fit with what they want. All the polling tells us they want something very different. Families are making their own choices anyway, but they're doing it in a way that puts stress and pressure on families and doesn't give them that choice and control. And that's what we've got to get back into a system.
Can we talk about what some of the benefits would be beyond, you know, establishing gender roles more equally in families? So talk about business, and I'm guessing a lot of opposition comes from business. It would be a good thing in the long term for business, because half the population wouldn't be progressing at a different level in the workplace.
Yeah, I mean, when we've been talking to business about this, we've said, you know, how do we position this issue in a way that's going to appeal to you? You know, because we don't want business voices obviously arguing against us. We want them with us. And they say, well, you know, isn't it just about enabling women to return to the workplace? Isn't it? Because the big loss, if you look at who drains away, it's when women have babies, and actually it's later in life when they become carers for older relatives or partners or whatever. So there are points in women's lives where they're particularly at risk of dropping out of the labour market and have trouble getting back in. And pregnancy and maternity is one of them. So enabling them to remain in closer contact with the workplace is key to averting that problem. And then also pregnancy discrimination, which is quite commonplace, where we've got 54,000 women each year forced out of work because of pregnancy discrimination. That would, we think, become less of an issue over time, because actually, who do you determine who that the less reliable employees are? Well, if you're all equally unreliable, if you like, then, you know, you're less likely to pick on those women. So I think it's about sharing that risk around and making sure that employers understand that getting women into the workplace is good for them and good for their business. And some of them already get it and already do.
Just on terms, in terms of cost, it obviously depends the rate of pay you set it at, but can you give us a sense of the ballpark we're talking about on the costs here?
I think the Women Equality Select Committee did some work on this when they had their inquiry in Fathers in the Workplace. And I think they put a cost of a more modest offer, so 90% for dads, but with a cap for 6 weeks at about sort of 500 million, something like that.
So for 3 months, maybe a billion-ish.
Yeah, yeah. But you've got to see that as an investment.
I mean, which is relatively, I mean, you know, easy for me to say, but it's relatively small in the context of overall government spending.
It is. And I think you have to see it as enabling a return for women in the economy. And actually, it's also about, you know, enabling dads to spend time with their children and have better relationships with their children. And actually, that has a value as well in terms of what the longer term benefits of that might be to society and so on. But, you know, it's hard to realise those things in the short term. So there is going to be a short term spend and investment, but there would be a return. And we have to model it in that way and not see it just as an absolute cost in the first year.
And are there other ways to encourage take up aside from the financial incentives?
Well, a use it or lose it. And so it is very much his to use or lose, rather than, you know, a period that's labelled as a, you know, for either parent. I think it's important that there's a period dedicated to dads, because it has to send that strong message. Because we've got, you know, if you talk to dads about flexible working, we haven't talked about that issue yet, but I think that's another example of where the culture can often inhibit the practice. And so you might have a policy that people have got a right to request flexible working and think you're a very enlightened employer in the way you operate that policy. But it's a cultural norm is that you don't really leave, or actually if someone does leave early, then they're not really as committed, are they?
Or job sharing.
Job sharing, yeah. Again, it's very hard for dads to sort of take those roles on and still demonstrate that they're committed, that they're right for promotion, they can do the big jobs, all of that stuff. When actually the norm is, if you want to be in those jobs, then you can't be doing those kind of softer workplace practices of flexibility. So, you know, we've got a bit of work to do before we can kind of normalize that around fathers. And that's the kind of thing that I think would enable leave to also be rolled out as a policy. So, you know, you need both to kind of speak to each other.
Would this be your biggest priority when it comes to changing leave arrangements, fathers? Or are there other things in relation to maternity leave and so on, or is this now the biggest priority, do you think?
I think it's the biggest fundamental shift that would enable both dads to spend more time with their children, but more than anything else, enable women to achieve, you know, closer to equality in the workplace. Because you can't be equal at home, you can't be equal at work. It's just as basic as that. And we haven't really challenged ourselves in terms of those cultural norms about who does the caring. And if we don't change that and start from a presumption of equality, we'll always be tinkering around the edges and we won't be moving forward. We're so far from that norm, you know. I mean, if you talk to dads and their experience of going to the school gate or going to, you know, baby and parent classes or whatever it is, they'll often
They're unusual.
They feel left out. They don't know how to join in the conversation. You know, it's all of those things. Why? Why are we so struggling? We all live in families where dads play a significant role, or with somebody in our family, you can point to an example. But it's still in our society and culture, just not normalised. So I think that's where we've got to get to. And that's hard because it's not something you can say is 50% of this, or it feels a bit nebulous. But actually, that's the feeling you want to have, isn't it? You know, and seeing a pregnant chief executive isn't going to be unusual either.
Sam, there's also a particular issue, isn't there, in relation to self-employed people who, you know, increasingly common in our society, people who are not in employment, who don't even have an employer, however inadequate it is, to sort of support them.
Yeah, and that's a growing group. And we are...
What do they get?
Well, at the moment, they don't get anything particularly. Right. So, you know, we've got a real problem with that growing group of people who are working but are not getting the benefits.
Do you get any paternity pay and leave if you're in that category?
No, basically. So you're in a very weak position.
And that was your position when Jean was born.
Yeah, I was freelance. So I had to use up. I had a certain number of weeks I could take in my contractor's annual leave where I wasn't contracted. Right. And I had to use that up rather than paternity leave.
Yeah, and we've got to start catering for those people and those families. Yeah, you know, and I think, again, a more creative approach to our system would address that. But at the moment, we're locked into a very old-fashioned system, which is old-fashioned in a number of ways. And one of them is the presumption about who's entitled to support and help from the system and who isn't. So it's about redesign.
So we do a thing on the podcast called the Jeffocracy, where I am appointed supreme leader. Now, I maybe hastily have already appointed Lars Minister for Children, but if I was to appoint you co-minister for children, I mean, what change needs to happen? What would you do?
So much of what we do in this country is start in the wrong place. So I would want us to start in a very different place about presumption of equality for who does the caring. And if we were to get that right, then we would get the rest of it right. But because we don't start in that different place, we don't get the rest right.
Okay. Sam Smothers, thanks so much for joining us.
Okay, thank you.
And to talk about their experience, we're joined by Sam White and Will McDonald, who are co-directors of public policy at Aviva. And Will, you are also chair of the Fatherhood Institute, and that's not the one where they dress as Spider-Man and climb up the big buildings.
Much as I'd love to get more dressed up in life, it's not that lot.
So I'm sure we'll talk about Fatherhood.
And there, we should say, they're the most senior male job share in the country.
Unless you can prove otherwise.
Unless you can prove otherwise.
Talk to us about...
I think we're in the presence of history here.
Yeah, I think we are. So explain to us what your situation is then, the two of you.
So we both work 3 days a week and we overlap on a Wednesday. We do it as a job share as opposed to two part-time jobs. So we're collectively responsible for everything. We share the blame, we share the praise. And we've been doing that for about 18 months now. We kicked it off by... I've been away for about 6 months doing parental leave with my second daughter, and Will had been doing my job while I was away. He got in touch saying, hey, I'm thinking of going part-time or job share with one of the other team members when you come back. And I said, let me think about that. It sounds interesting. And phoned back a couple of days later and said, well, why don't we change this job into a job share? So we pitched it as a trial initially for 6 months because we wanted to prove that we could deliver at least a good a service together as either of us were doing alone, give everyone kind of confidence because they'd never tried anything at sort of a director level before. And at the end of the 6 months, you know, everyone seemed happy.
You mentioned the 6 month parental leave. Is that standard at Aviva?
Yeah. So it's been a big change over the last few years, trying to become a more flexible, family friendly employer and trying to remove obstacles to people's progression. And one of the things Aviva did about a year ago was say, okay, the government scheme on shared parental leave, that's all well and good, but actually I think we can do one better and say we'll offer a very simple system where 6 months, full pay, male, female, gay, straight, you know, adopted, natural birth, part-time, full-time, regardless, you qualify for 6 months parental leave.
And that's throughout the entire company?
Yeah, it's not just the UK as well. It's through quite a few of the international markets too.
And Sam, tell us, because your first child... Betsy, who I know, you'd had a couple of weeks off the standard. And then with your second child, Sylvie, you've had 6 months off. What difference has that made to you?
Yeah, I didn't even manage the full 2 weeks. Oh, right, think about it with the first one. I got a call midway through saying by my CEO saying, I need you to do a leak plan for me. And I said, I'm on parental leave. And he said, yeah, sure, we'll make it up later. But the second time round, I took 6 months. So I had the exact opposite experience. But what was great was I kind of got a kind of a bog off deal. I got a kind of 2-for-1 because, you know, the 6 months I wasn't working looking after Sylvie, I had my 2-year-old Betsy as well. So it was an amazing opportunity to bond with her at that age.
Because I think it's really important that people sort of understand this is not some theoretical thing. I mean, what difference has this made you as a dad?
It's hard to say the counterfactual of what it might have been otherwise, but what I've gained from it is just feeling very bonded with my kids.
Yeah.
I got to do a lot more of that stuff that many dads don't have the opportunity to do, you know, for good or for ill, scraping porridge off the floor, but also great stuff like parks and feeding ducks and, you know, toddler groups. And I don't think I'd ever found the time to memorize every lyric in Frozen if I hadn't had that time to myself.
And it's unusual.
The 6 months.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. When I did it, it was before Aviva rolled out this kind of super generous 6-month full pay. It was still pretty generous, but it was unusual at the time. Now it's becoming much more common practice at Aviva. And since it was introduced a year ago, 700 people in the UK have taken parental leave under the scheme. And it's been 300 men and 400 women. So not quite 50-50, but, you know, edging to that sort of place. And it's becoming a more cultural norm within the organisation, in part because I think people are going out of their way to talk about it and say, this is not a career-limiting thing. This is something that we know people value their family life and we want you to do.
And we'll talk about it from your point of view. You haven't had the dad's leave because you had your kids before this came in. Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. And it was obviously it's very compelling, but not enough to have a fourth child.
But talk about the experience of the job share.
So the job share...
What difference does it make to you as a dad? I mean, as well as, you know, your job?
It is incredible the difference it makes, but and I guess it's in a thousand different ways every day kind of thing. So I share the care of our kids with my wife, who also works 3 days a week. And when we go back to getting married and thinking about having children, we thought we'd try and stay equal. And it turns out after a few kids, you know, life ends up very unequal. I was working 5 days a week and was earning a lot more, and she was, you know, not working that much and not earning that much. And I guess we thought, unless you sort of do something pretty radical about it, you're going to get, this is why we have a massive gender pay gap. You know, in part, this is why society is structured like it is. And we didn't want to end up like that. So the job share has made a huge difference. It means, you know, I know the other parents at school as well as my wife does. You know, I'm as responsible for making a costume that the kids had to take in last Thursday. So, they're, you know, you're cutting up cereal packets on Wednesday night at midnight sort of thing. And I think in terms of me and the kids, it's exactly like Sam says. I spent a lot of time with our third child, our youngest, it's just incredible how much you kind of understand them and how much and how does it show up? I guess there was, you know, previously, you know, if you asked the question, who do you want to get you out of the bath? It would be mummy. And that just has changed. Life is just a bit more equal. I think the great thing is that means weekends are more equal because I am, you know, as good at cooking a children's meal and changing nappies, and I know where the nappies are and the wipes are. And I think unless you start off in the early years really trying to get equality in practice, unless you actually do it, I genuinely don't think that women are intrinsically better at caring for small children. I think they just do it a lot more. And we men, or those who want to, you know, fight really hard to make it happen.
How has it been at work? It's obviously an unusual arrangement for men.
And I think we get the argument, you know, quite often, which is fun to play with. You know, real men don't job share.
That's Piers Morgan who said that, presumably. Yeah, yeah.
The reaction to start with, oh, that sounds good. And then immediately, it wouldn't work in my job. So I think what we do, and we've actually built this into one of our kind of objectives as a job share at work, is one of our jobs is to advocate for more job shares, which is partly going around and pointing out that we do, you know, a senior job. We have managed multiple budget lines. We've got loads of direct reports. You know, we run big projects globally, you know, around lots of markets. We've got loads of external stakeholders. This is all very manageable as a job share.
And is it in the 2 days that you're both not at work, are you off? Or are you not off?
Yeah, I mean, When you say off, we're looking after small children.
Sorry, so I know that.
Are you talking about like not replying to emails?
Still there.
So when we got started on the job share, we went and spoke to a bunch of other job sharers because we thought, look, we've got to nail this trial and show that we can do this right. Yeah. And we'd learn from best practice and avoid pitfalls. And one of the things people who made it successful said was you need a kind of shared vision. And some of them had really quite legalistic documents between them. Others just had a sort of set of principles. And we evolved a set of principles. And one of them, which has been absolutely instrumental, has been brilliant handovers and when in charge, take charge. And brilliant handovers mean the other person can hit the ground running, but it also means the other person's not going to need to phone you while you're not there.
Yes, well, that's what I was wondering.
It has everything from the urgent stuff, do the minute you walk in,
yes,
actions you should deal with, but also that kind of, just for information, gossip we heard in the corridor. You know, I was speaking to a colleague and he told me this might happen. Just a little bits and pieces that enable both of us to be almost entirely interoperable. Tell one of us, you've told both of us.
What's the reaction been like in the corporate world? I mean, do you talk to people from other companies? Do you see this developing elsewhere?
Yeah, I mean, it mostly very positive. I think we've
a bit like you're a rare species.
Yeah, a bit, you know, treated a little bit with bemusement. Yeah.
Our boss calls us her exotic pets.
Yeah, I mean, there's the odd, you know, trade body where you had to, you know, point out that we were two people doing one job and either one of us could be on this committee or not. There's a, you know, a bit of hierarchy and stuff, but that is all, you know, very, you deal with that and you move on. I mean, we are quite rare. What would be really interesting is more people doing this, more people trying it, and then we'll see what the lessons are.
And what is the Fatherhood Institute, and how does this factor into that?
So I'm chair of trustees of this. It's a charity. It's called the Fatherhood Institute. It basically tries to help dads get involved with their kids. So there's lots and lots of research out there about the more dads are involved, the better it is for the mothers, for the dads. You know, they have better mental health, they drink less, they smoke less. There's all kinds of, and there's lots of good reasons why you want dads involved with their kids. It's, you know, there's lots of peer-reviewed studies on how children grow up happier, feeling more secure, and so on. And a lot of this goes with common sense, but it tends to be not quite what happens. So if you look around the early years and maternity services and so on, you know, a lot of, you know, when you talk to dads, a lot of them will recognize the scenario that you go to your first antenatal, you know, appointment and the midwife doesn't really talk to the dad. You know, there's no seat for you. You know, you're literally a spare part. Whereas actually what we know, if you want to tackle some of the tough stuff in pregnancy, say you want to try to help the mother to be give up smoking, the biggest factor is whether the dad to be will give up smoking. That will influence the mother. So you've got to involve both. And I think what you see is we're really, you know, we're trying to go with the grain of what's happening. If you ask millennials, you know, how they want to work, how much they want to be involved with their kids, they've got a completely different attitude, even from, you know, people in me and Sam's generation, let alone our dads.
Jeff will understand that because Jeff is a borderline millennial.
Yeah. I think we all are, aren't we?
Yeah. or Zennial, actually, is what we call it.
I mean, Ed's very much a baby boomer.
Yeah. Now, we've got this thing on the podcast called the Jeffocracy, which is a sort of nightmarish vision of what could be. But leave that to one side. In order to make it less nightmarish, if Jeff, as a supreme ruler, made you the joint ministers in a job share for fatherhood.
We do need a joint a job share MP or minister fairly soon.
We do. Well, I was wondering about that, actually.
Yeah, so it has been tested and the court, I think it was a green MP to try to job share, and I think the court said it wasn't legally possible. So this is a challenge that someone needs to take on.
I've got to say, actually, to Will's point, since we started job sharing and meeting other job sharers, we've come around to the view that almost any job could be done like that.
MP, including an MP.
Including an MP, absolutely. Given the hours you work, it might be a blessed relief to...
Yeah. So you think Jeff and I should start on a joint ticket at the next election? I'm not sure about that, Sunshine.
You don't have to like each other, but you do have to trust each other. Yeah, so that's your test when you're thinking about it.
Do you think it's genuinely practical? I mean, sorry to sound like I'm not meaning to be the skeptic here, but what? So if it was a voting on a Thursday, I mean, how do you...
For MPs in particular, well, I mean, you would have to have some shared vision of how you operate in the same way that any good job share would work. If the two of you fundamentally are trying to achieve different things and didn't agree, it's not going to work. No job share is going to work like that. But if you get that degree of trust and you know, common goal,
I mean, I certainly also think as a minister, why shouldn't you be a job share minister? I mean, that is, in a way, it's almost less, well, I mean, you've still got a decision-making issue, but it's less complicated because you're not standing for election as a minister. Mm-hmm. So go on, what would you do in the Jeffocracy then?
So I would have a use it or lose it element of for dads of parental leave. So at the moment you've got this shared system and parents basically are pitted against each other who gets to take the leave.
Yeah.
And it leads to all kinds of odd, you know, dynamics between couples. And you've even seen, there's a bit of anecdotal evidence that where the dad took some of that, they shared it in the first time round, the second time round, that the mother's gone, no, I'm having it all this time.
Right.
Because this is weird dynamic it sets up. So if you look at where they have really good systems, the dads, you know, the Icelands and Swedens of these world, you know, the dads have a use it or lose it bit. And the lose it bit means dads do take it up. And then you get a lifetime of benefit, you know, rolling on from that. And clearly, the more you could make it paid, you know, at a decent rate, the better.
Yeah. Sam?
So I think I would just treat men and women equally on this one and just say, at the moment, you are treated differently by the law if you're a man or a woman.
Yeah.
Second part of it is more of it would be paid. That was a thesis of Eva tested when they said, we think more men would take this if we paid it. And sure enough, as soon as we did, nearly 7% of men in the last year took the full 6 months.
Now, some people will be listening to this and be wondering about the hard data. So go on, give us some facts and figures to convince us.
So I think my favourite is where dads take 2 weeks with their first child, that the couple is 30% less likely to separate.
Wow.
And I think if you look at the societal costs of separation, it is, you know, that is, you know, definitely incredible.
Definitely.
And it's all just by building in a bit more equality at the very beginning.
And it has an impact on women's wages as well?
Yeah, I think it was Sweden when they introduced their very substantive change to give dads more leave. They found that for every additional month that the dad took, that the mother's earnings went up by 7%.
Across the rest of their career?
For the rest of their life.
And what about the experience at Aviva, Sam?
Yeah, so we found in 1 year's worth of data that the average amount of time men are taking off since we introduced the policy is 21 weeks, which is like 5 months.
Yeah.
And a year ago, it was 2 weeks. So going from 2 to 21, I mean, it's a huge shift. And we did that by taking out two things, taking out the financial penalty, i.e. paying people, and taking out the kind of cultural anxiety by saying, this is okay, and holding up lots of role models.
So people will do it if they're offered it.
Yeah, the evidence seems to suggest men want to do this if they're given the opportunity.
I'm totally sold.
Absolutely.
Do you think they've got the job?
I think so.
Definitely.
They could share it.
Yeah. Sam and Will, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm a convert.
Definitely. Who wouldn't be a convert?
I know. It sort of made me think differently about it, though, I suppose.
So how were you thinking about it beforehand?
Well, I was thinking it's really important to increase the paternity leave to 3 months, you know, use it or lose it, because I knew that that was the Swedish system. I think we discussed it on an early episode on the gender pay gap. But I'm now much more convinced. And obviously that was founded on a belief in equality, but I suppose I'm now much more convinced that you've got to try and, as Sam said, Sam, Will and Lars, in a way, in different ways, we're all saying you've got to start with equality as a principle. And then what does that look like? Not how can we sort of bolt on a bit more leave?
And what do you think the chances of it being talked about seriously anytime sooner?
Well, I think we've got this other elephant in the room. but I think it is, I sort of feel it, you know, it's a sort of change multiplier, isn't it? If that doesn't sound too, like, ridiculous.
Yeah, it has all these knock-on effects.
Well, it has all these knock-on, it's just not just about fathers. Mm. It's about the gender pay gap. It's about, you know, the way the home is organized. It's just, it's sort of multiply important.
Email us, reasons@cheerfulpodcast.com. Follow us on Twitter @cheerfulpodcast or search for our Facebook page, Reasons to be Cheerful Podcast.
And here to pitch us some ideas which could be potential reasons to be cheerful, we are joined by comedian Sindhu V. Hello.
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 This is a beautiful moment we're witnessing, podcast listener.
Well, Sindhu and I were at university together.
We were in the same college.
The same college in the same year?
I was a year ahead. Because you were a year ahead. 2 years.
Yeah, yeah.
You were my JCR president.
I was. Junior Common Room, that is.
Yes. I didn't know what that was.
And it was like an election. I was like, who are these people? Who are these children who are running for election?
Yeah. And I was one of them.
And you were one of them.
Yeah.
But also because I was a foreign student and we were sort of, there were some more helpful undergrads who'd already been in the system for a year at Corpus Christi, which is where we were. And Ed was one of the very helpful ones. He knew everything, he was very organized. Like, please come here, and this is very nice. And you could, and I was like, oh, he's so helpful.
So I operated under a different name.
Yeah, so yeah, Ed had a pseudonym.
Ted. We all called him Ted.
Yeah.
And even now when I say, oh, something, something Ted, people are like, you mean Ed? I'm like, no, I genuinely mean Ted.
I was Ted for 3 years, and it all came about because the philosophy tutor wrongly said at our introductory meeting, I gather you like to be called Ted. And then it sort of stuck, and then I kind of quite liked it.
Yeah,
and
I thought his name was
I would have been Edward up to then, you see.
Yes. And was he sort of like a cool bad boy?
No. I was like
a square good boy.
He was very good. He was very serious.
Yeah.
I mean, so let me put this in perspective. Yeah. I've come from India. I'm on a scholarship, so I'm sort of scared that if my grades drop, you know, whatever, it's all very new. I have to go back, get married in 2 years, which, you know, so I'm like on a tight schedule here. So I show up and I realize that a lot of what happens on the weekends in terms of socializing is everyone just lies about drunk on the, you know, you come out of college, you're just lying around drunk. I never saw you do that. No. You know, you just didn't do that.
What were you doing, Ed? Why weren't you lying around drunk?
I was too busy running for office.
Yeah, he was.
So, or being in office, actually. It was quite a lot of work. But, I mean,
What were your big achievements?
We had this big rent dispute and demonstrated. And there's actually footage floats around the internet.
Yes, absolutely. I remember
of me
that.
At like the age of 19 or
something. And what do you remember about Sindhu then?
Oh, God.
She was cool.
I played a lot of basketball.
Than me.
Well, but that's not saying anything.
Well, there was a low bar.
I don't want to be rude, but I got to say. Also, you weren't on the schedule I was. I was like, I need to get here. I need to learn how to drink.
You played basketball.
Yeah.
And you learned how to drink.
Yeah. Well, I couldn't drink. So I used to always be vomiting in the corner somewhere, you know, but I was getting used to it.
So when you knew Sindhu back in the day, did you see a future for her where she would be on the stage on Have I Got News For You, being nominated for Best Newcomer at Edinburgh?
I thought she was just incredibly smart. And so I didn't know.
I didn't know.
And Sindhu,
I'd never seen live stand-up when I did it.
When you knew Ed all those years ago, did you see a future for him where he would be hosting a podcast?
I didn't know what a podcast was, but I definitely knew that Ed would do something in politics.
Sindhu, you've brought along some ideas with you.
Yes.
What's your first one?
Well, my first idea is I would institute a Tell Your Teenager Day. And once a year, you get to tell your teenager what you really think of them and their behavior.
You've got teenagers.
Two. And also give them a true picture of their prospects in life given this behavior. And then the next day, it all resets and you go back to accepting all their BS and blaming it on their hormones.
Now, have you trialed this scheme with your own teenagers?
I don't think this is a once-a-year thing in my house. I mean, I'm a proper Indian mother. I will
all the time.
If you do the things that require me to have this conversation, and as my son always says to me, oh, mate, please, I've heard this before. He calls me mate. Sometimes he calls me bruv.
How old is he?
17. Yeah. So, I mean, I think it's very good. I think it's very important for parents, and I think it's very important for the kids to hear that.
Does your parents do that to you?
Are you kidding?
Yeah, all the time.
Constantly. My father didn't speak to me when I dropped the E in PPE. Didn't speak to me. Wouldn't speak to me. What are you going to do with your life? You're not doing economics. What's philosophy? No one does philosophy. Whatever.
Okay, we like it.
Yeah, let's have it.
Tell the truth to your teenagers.
All right, what else, Sindhu?
I would make it illegal for 24 hours, and it would be lengthy jail time if transgressed, illegal to say or publish the word Brexit. Complete moratorium on use of that word
important. And
alluding to it in any way, shape, or form. You will go to jail for 45 years solitary.
We're relatively free zone,
yes,
aren't we?
Yes, yeah. I nearly said it then. Yeah, yeah, yeah. We're trying to
sort of be a distraction
away from that.
Yeah.
So it's not something you ever sort of come up against on stage as you go around the country
all the time.
Yeah.
I mean, there's comics that are very political. But I talk about Brexit in the sense I use it as a metaphor for all the trash, different kinds of trash fires one can find oneself in. But yeah, I use it. It's such a huge part of our conception of what world we're living in. I use it as a metaphor for marriage in a lot of ways, but it always comes on. I think the worst thing though is I'm so tired of Brexit, and then someone gets on stage and makes a really bad joke. I'm like, please don't double down on this pain. Stop it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, I've sort of forgotten what the news was like without that word in it. Yeah. I've sort of forgotten what the government used to do.
The news
before.
Will be shorter.
Yeah.
There'll be lots of things to talk about.
Yeah.
That's the tragedy.
Well, no, absolutely. And I think we had the outcome in the United States come, and then right on the heels of that, you know, this thing. And I think it just feels like you know when you've taken a flight and it does that big dip and you think this is it, and you start immediately, I don't know what you do, I just immediately start doing the 40 versus 201 because that's what I do. And then it comes up again, you say, okay, and then has, you know, sometimes on transatlantic turbulence, flights, you can have that. I feel like that's all I've been in.
Constant turbulence.
And some big dips. And you
without a warning from the pilot.
No, nothing.
Or any sense that they're going to be able to land it.
Yeah. You're just like, how can I get off this flight?
Yeah.
But you can't because you're there.
Great. I'm up for that.
Yeah, we're up for that.
What else?
Appreciate the converted.
Okay. It would be step in your own dog's poop day. There'd be a day where...
You've got a dog.
What? Yes. If you don't pick up your dog's poop and you get caught, you have to carry it around.
I'm really in favor of this.
You have to chuck it in front of you and step in it, and then chuck it in front of you and step in it, and chuck it in front of you and step in it. So basically carry it, step in it, carry it, step in it.
Are you a good pooper scooper?
Massively good.
And massively scooping.
Scooping all the time.
I saw some people in the park the other day, and they were literally, I thought they'd lost something, but they had two nice dogs that were twins, actually, and they were like circling an area, and I said, "What have you lost something?" And they said, "No, we're just trying to find the poo. It's very hard grass." I mean, I thought that was very impressive.
And just to finish, the poop you get on your shoe, you have to keep all day. Can't scrape it off, and we'll check it. Oof. Okay, now, there's a few caveats to this. Okay. I mean people who let their dog poop on the sidewalk and just walk away, right? Now, I don't...
Well, long grass, you think it's all right?
No, it's all right. I think if you put in a good effort, you can't find it.
Right.
It's in the bushes in a park where no one would be walking. Fine, we'll cut you some slack.
If somebody's in those bushes, they're up to no good.
Yeah, they should be stepping in pooping, frankly. But, you know, and then if it's long grass or if you do some kind of barter where you pick up some other poop, so, you know, karmically the poop situation is fine for you.
Neutral, poop neutral.
Yeah, poop neutral. But on the sidewalk?
Yeah, it's bad.
Are you joking?
Do you not feel that most people have got this memo now and you don't see it so much anymore?
No.
I don't think you
just got to walk on the street. And I do a lot of walking now because I'm running from gig to gig.
Why do you have the dog?
Why I like dogs.
How long have you had the dog?
What kind of question is this? You see, this is the kind of question, this is what Ted would ask me.
Why? How long have you had the dog?
He's 11.
Oh, right.
He's lovely. I grew up with dogs. Crunchy.
And what sort of dog is Crunchy?
He's a yellow lab. He's born in 2008. We named him for the credit crunch. Yeah.
And is he a good boy?
He's fantastic.
He's a good boy.
He's such a good boy. He's so lovely. I'm going to quickly show you a picture. Look at this guy's the most handsome.
Oh, he is.
He's
look
handsome.
At Crunchy. What a look handsome
at that
boy.
Pretty nice. And also, it's a bit. I was thinking of the chocolate bar Crunchy.
Mm.
No, but yeah, I don't. But
he'd like, but it looks a bit like a chocolate bar.
Yes, and he would like to eat a chocolate bar and then go blind because chocolate makes dogs blind.
Is that true?
Massive myth, but I've taught the kids that.
Dogs used to eat it, and then all of a sudden they discovered it was very bad for dogs, right?
Yeah, but no one's dog was dying. I mean, my dogs in India like, literally grew up on dairy milk. They were fine. They died of old age.
Well, I like your poop rules.
Yes.
Good.
Yeah,
we
keep
like
going.
Okay. Then I have school-run celebration drink.
Yeah.
Once a year, when you drop your kid to school, you get a top-quality alcoholic beverage of your choice.
That's great.
I mean, several, not one. And, of course, you can also have not alcoholic, but... and a place to sit and enjoy it with other parents at all schools. It's just a big congratulatory drink for all the other mornings you've sacrificed your sanity to get your kids to school on time, properly fitted and kitted, while they have actively tried to sabotage this same goal possible way.
You get a reward.
A reward.
Yeah, you get a reward. And it's better than those coffee mornings. And plus, everyone's gets sozzled. It's 9:30. No one knows what the hell's going on.
So 9:30 in the morning.
And it's not after school.
It's not pick up.
No.
All right.
And everyone knows that that's the day. So at work, they're like, you have kids. You're completely off your face. We get it.
I mean, we've already established from your days at Corpus Christi that you weren't a day drinker.
No, probably not.
But you have kids now. Anything will make you drink.
You're
come
driven
on.
To it.
Yeah, that's true. Okay.
You seem skeptical.
I can't imagine drinking at 9:30 in the morning.
You see, I can, and that's why I haven't had a drink for 18 years.
I can. I haven't had a drink for a month. I'm on this big, big, big detox of everything, including fun and joy. literally, I'm
That's why you came here today.
No, I'm just continuing. But, oh, my God, my life is hell. But it's working. I mean, I wanted to walk in here and I want everyone to stand up and clap and be like, your skin looks amazing. But then I realized
Your skin looks amazing.
Thank you. No one's already seen me before, but it with all that I'm not eating, it should be looking great.
Really?
I have no makeup on. How does it look?
Really good.
Let's have your next idea.
The next one's super simple. In January, you only have to go to work in the hours it's light.
Oh, definitely.
And you get double pay for those hours.
Definitely. I hate the darkness.
No, it's just wrong. I just think that, you know, everything that we know in about the science of the human body, you know, you're buying lamps to wake you up, this and that. You're lying under a lamp to not be sad. Darkness does not work for humans. I mean, look at the whole of Scandinavia. No offense. But in January, you've come through November. Christmas is over. You're probably on a detox. So many marriages end at Christmas.
Is that right?
It's like one of the biggest statistics. The day after Christmas, people are like, actually, here's your present. I'm out of here.
Wow.
Things like this. And so I think in January, we should all be rewarded for going to work.
Yeah, I basically agree with this.
In an environment that is not our natural environment. And we still do it, you know? You still get up, take your kids to school. Why?
So you're saying your kids should be at home with you all day, every day?
No, you should be allowed to bring them to school whenever you're ready. Be like, here's the
great
kid now.
I'm into this.
Yeah. So I think you need to get paid.
Yeah.
And you should only go when it's light.
Yeah. Cindy, what are you up to at the minute? Can people come and see you? Are you on tour? Yes, you're doing the tour, aren't you?
I am. So I've got to run at Soho Theatre.
Great.
In January. And then I'm going on tour in the UK. Ed, can you believe it?
Are you taking your dog and the kids?
No. I've got a system where I don't have to not see the kids for days and days and days because that's uncool.
Yeah.
And the tickets are on Ticketmaster and the show is called Sandhog. And
Sandhog.
And yeah, that's what I'm up to in the immediate future.
Sounds great.
Lovely. And after that, you can organize a reunion.
Definitely.
You and Ted.
Well, actually, now that after this, we have to somehow get everyone together.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Cindy, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Reasons to be cheerful with Ed Miliband and Jeff Lloyd.
Well, I enjoyed all that immensely.
Definitely. Should we do thank yous?
Yes.
I think you should do the Lars thank you. So
thank you to Lars Arrhenius.
Very good. And I'd like to thank Sam Smethers, Sam White, and Will McDonald.
And thanks to Sindhu V.
Rolling back the years.
Yeah, back when you were Ted.
Exactly.
In your youth, Teddy boy.
Exactly.
Emma Caution produces our podcast. Our announcer is Gail Lofthouse. James Deacon made the idents. And Ed Seed composed the music. I said composed then.
Yeah.
But the artwork was
Emily
done by...
Emily Power.
Somebody tweeted this week. Was it you, Emma? Find somebody to love you the way that Ed loves saying Emily Power at the end of every podcast.
Power to Emily Power.
Yeah. He's been Ted Miliband.
He's been... Geoff Lloyd.
And these have been
Reasons to be Cheerful.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Getting caught in the wrong shoes can interrupt your plans for the day, like when that 10% chance of rain ends up looking more like 100%. When the transition to fall and winter feels more like experiencing every season on the same day, there's the Allbirds Mizzle Collection. These shoes were made for misty morning walks, surprise snow days, and anything a trip to the dog park might bring. The whole collection brings together water-repellent technology and classic style, so you can stay warm, dry, and comfy during your everyday adventures. Cross off errands with the splash protection on the Wool Runner Mizzle. Dash through cold and wet weather with all-condition traction and reflective details on the Wool Dasher Mizzle. Or upgrade to next-level protection with the Mudguard on the Wool Runner-Up Mizzle Plus. Go to allbirds.com and use code FRESHSOCKS for a free pair of socks with your purchase. ALLBIRDS.com, code FRESHSOCKS.
So, you've got an idea for a business. The store of your dreams. There's just one thing to figure out. Everything. That's why Shopify's all-in-one commerce platform makes it easy to sell online, in person, and everywhere else. Sell on social media,
source products with an app to get that first sale feeling. It's the only solution that gives you everything you need to sell everywhere you want. So when you're ready to bring your idea to life, power it up with Shopify.
Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/listen.